The Yukon Charlie ethnographic overview report. I would like to ask Terry do a little interview on some of Terry's dog machine. And the reason why I do this is that some of the things that made Yukon Charlie or that established Yukon Charlie was based on the actual lifestyle and some of the activities that Terry had done within the National Preserve. And that I think this will help in supporting and supplementing what you already said on the interview.
Okay.
Terry, I know and that you have entered the Iditarod. When is the first time you entered the Iditarod race?
1975. I think the third year that they had. I think it started 72 or so, 73, and went on here in 75 and ran it.
Where did you, how far did you get on that one?
At the time, they were going through a place called Farewell. They had a...
Alaska Range.
Yeah, on the other side of the Alaska Range, and then Farewell had a big, a station. What do they call them?
Point Ellis.
Yeah, I can't even remember. But anyway, it went through there, and then at that time, it bypassed what they call the Farewell Burn and was going around it. And I went out of there, and I left there, and I had a... That time, we just used basket sleds, you know. They didn't have toboggans yet. And I ripped up the one side of my sled. I took all the stanchions, got beat out of it, so... You know, I had to get out of it. Then I came back to Farewell and got flown out. It was an FAA station is what it was. Got flown out of there. So that wasn't really too far on the other side of Rainy Pass, I don't think, if I recall.
Prior to this, before you entered that, you trained your dogs riding Eagle, right?
Yeah, I actually got my first couple dogs when I was in Copper Center before I became into Eagle. And, At that time, people who were getting in the first Iditarod generally had a lot of guys were trappers, and you know they just kind of used the dogs they had in the yard. They really hadn't got into developing a lot of what they would call the Iditarod dogs or the long distance dogs yet. So they kind of used what they had, you know, and they really didn't know how to train that much in feeding schedules and nutrition. You know, all that really would come later.
How many dogs did you have?
I started with 10 dogs, and that's all I had.
Yeah, I mean, within your...
Oh, I only had about 10. I had 10 or 12 in the yard at the time. That's when we lived down
that's
the 70 mile. Yeah, so we didn't have many, but...
And you entered it twice, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yes, and...
And I scratched it out again. The second time was further up the line, but it was up at... place called Eagle Island, up on the Yukon, and that's when we went through the southern route. And that time, I got pretty sick, and I had to get out of it then.
What Terry's talking about is back then, it was very, very the first or second, third year of the Iditarod race was that. Things were just like what he was doing on the trap line. The same dog team, same sled, same
Pretty much everything, yeah.
Now you see all this high-tech gears and high-tech this and high-tech everything. So,
Come a long way, and it really, you know, it's really helped the whole sport, really. You know, they've improved everything, and especially dog care, you know.
So I know that you always did like dog teams, though, right?
Yeah, I really liked the dogs. I enjoyed it, and you know, I remember when mushing out of Eagle before those races came into being. You know, and I'd follow some of those mail trails, you know, that were still intact that the old Biederman family used to run and stuff. And they knew Charlie Biederman; he was the last one to haul a mail, you know, and stuff. Some of those guys.
Those are the people that kind of. They help you, and you listen to them, and they encourage you too, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And the interesting thing here too is that a lot of these things are some of the same things that has been done in the past. So that's the reason why I want to emphasize on this, to say that this guy has done it, you know,
yeah.
Not to say it, but that's what it was and that's what it's going to be. But you during that time too, you fed your dogs only fish, right, from the Yukon?
Yeah, mainly fish. Yeah, mainly fish. We try to get suet or, you know, scraps from caribou or scraps from moose. And, you know, one time you could actually feed caribou, you know, the dogs back when. They didn't allow that. And it wasn't, you know, I mean, it was meat for dogs. It wasn't best, but, I mean, you could feed it.
It is interesting to note, too, Terry, is that up until about that time when you start entering these races, that I do not remember or heard of any kind of a dog race in Eagle prior to that. And by you entering those things, and then I think in later years you even brought some of those breeding dogs from other teams into here which are very good breeds.
Yeah, when I first got here, and when I was out in the village, when I first was there teaching, I had dogs then, and there weren't many dog teams around, if any. You know, there were a few dogs in the village. Guys still use them a little bit. But yeah. After I got here, then a few guys started running dogs, you know, and then it wasn't until the river people moved on into the, you know, on the Yukon in the 70s, and they all had a few dogs. And then by the 80s, when the racing really got going, then a lot of people started doing dogs here. A lot of my early dogs, you know, were bred. A lot of the guys in the river had them, and so.
Yeah, I think too, you know, one of the wonders of this is that we still, Eagle, through Percy DeWolf and through those Charlie Biederman mail carriers, we're still connected in one way or another. What you too, Terry, is that, you know, the actual doings of these things, and which is great.
You know,
thank God we are. And right now, like next week, they're going to have a few.
That's right.
Pretty good sized dog race.
Little race coming out of here. That's going down river and back a little ways, and there's 7 or 8 teams in it. You know, people that are running dogs now, and kind of good to have.
What do you foresee about the Yukon Quest? Let me first ask you. How about the Yukon Quest? Did you ever get involved with it?
Yeah, I ran that one time, and I never finished that either. But I had a pretty good run for about 3-4 days, and I actually was near the front of the pack for those days. And then again, I got sick, so I had to get out of there. And I was down going towards, I don't even know where I was going, Stewart River or someplace. And I really had a good dog team then, and I was, I was doing well. But that's a good race. In a lot of ways, it's hard to compare it to the Iditarod. I mean, they're both long-distance races.
Yeah.
And the Quest doesn't have as many people that enter it, but they have less checkpoints, and it goes over some pretty tough country, you know. And not that the Iditarod doesn't. The Iditarod has more checkpoints, and you touch bases with people a lot more than the Quest. But I think the Quest is, you know, here to stay. It's got a lot of interest in Canada because it's an international race, and so.
When I was just a young kid, I remember Percy DeWolf coming down from Dawson, just a young kid, but just mail carrier. And we had some here, a family right here, the Biedermans, that did the same thing. Can you tell me that what you think of those people? Were that to you like they were tough people, or were
I always thought that was quite a thing, the Biedermans especially, you know, because again, I knew Charlie, and I used to, when I first got here, I helped him build a couple fish wheels when he was still building them, and so I talked to him about, you know, going to Circle and back, and, you know, how he'd be out on the river, he'd be able to stay at a cabin every night but one, you know, there'd be a heated cabin for them to get into and stuff. But it's just a long way, and I think it was a 6 or 7 day trip one way and then coming back again. And then from your dad, I used to hear about Percy DeWolf coming down from Dawson.
So I think one of the things that the Percy DeWolf from Dawson to here to Eagle is part of that to relive the Percy. And I used to hear him called the Iron Man of the Yukon or something like that. And I would say too is that, you know, Doug Mushing has not died in Eagle. It still goes on, but it was at one time the way of life.
That's right.
There was no other forms of transportation. That was it.
Either that or
and
walking.
And even when you
came,
you remember part of that, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's when I first got to Eagle, I think there were a couple snow machines in town, but they didn't go very far. And, you know, people weren't using them to get out very far because basically they didn't trust them yet, you know. But so if people wanted to get out in the woods, they generally, you know, they had dog teams, they didn't go. But it wasn't long before the snow machiners started to get out further and further. So now they're part of the fabric.
What would you think it looks for the, I want to look at the Yukon Quest, because that part of that is goes into the preserve.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you think of the future is that? Is that?
Oh, I think the Yukon Quest will
survive.
Stay. I think it'll survive. It's, you know, they didn't, I think they planned originally that there would be a lot more interest in it as far as numbers of teams and stuff, because they, you know, they thought that would really work. And they're, it's gone down quite a bit, and now I think there was 23 or 4 teams that started this year. The year I ran it, I think there's 35 teams or 34. You know, I think there's enough support every year and enough interest, dog mushers, that it's you know, it's expensive and there's a lot of to get into, but it doesn't compare to the Iditarod as far as expense and the logistics of getting food out and all that. It's not quite as involved, so it's a, you know, it gives mushers an alternative to the Iditarod, really.
To me too, you know, when I was asked a question similar to that, is that I think it helped Eagle too. It sort of put us back on the map that we are out there, and you know, we get kind of,
you know, when they first started the quest, that was about 84, I think.
83?
84, yeah. Yeah, and it was a big deal. I can remember people coming to the quest. The checkpoint was down by the old Episcopalian church. And people flew in from, you know, there was a lot of media people here.
Yeah.
You know, people just came into Eagle just to watch it come through Eagle. And so they had a lot of hopes that it was going to really be a big thing. And it was, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it, you know, and it's still intact, and I think probably it'll keep going.
Well, it's competition with the other one, too, you know.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Because one was the first, and they want to be the best or something like that, so we have to top them off some way once in a while, you know. Yeah.
Well, you got some competition with two, you know, major population areas, too. I mean, Anchorage, I did realize Anchorage's race, you know, and the Quest is Fairbanks's race, so, you know, they're going to,
What do you see as a dog team in the Eagle area? What do you think, or even some of the activities like boating, what do you think of them in the future? Where do you think?
Well, I don't know, if the price of gas keeps going up, there's not going to be much boating, I'll tell you that. Probably canoeing or people on rafts or something, rubber boats or something. But I think it's always going to be here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people are, you know, still going to partake of the Yukon and the surrounding areas and stuff for one thing or another. So, but again, you know, I don't think a lot of people are going to come in here
just
to do a lot of things from someplace else, simply because they got to drive in here and there's no facilities, you know, right now.
Yeah.
Few facilities, gas is expensive. So.
Yeah, the Yukon Quest is just, to me, and it was started as just an endurance test. We'll make it hard on you.
Yeah.
I think originally it came down through on the river from Dawson, but they said that's too easy, so they took you up the 40 mile and
that out made on the, that made the difference. Yeah, you bet.
So this the thing that they ran into in this 2:11 race,
yeah,
I will tell you
that proved that,
yeah,
those guys are tough too, and when they had a tough time coming across that summit, and that's mm-hmm. you know, it, when it blows up there, boy, it's, you know, it just
that's the reason why they put it. They said they wanted something to barrier so that they had to fight it.
Yeah.
But I how about dog team? What do you think of it in the future in Eagle? We know we got a few dog mushers here too, but I mean, you.
Well, I think there's, you know, I think
it's coming back. You think, or?
Well, I think it's going to be here now. Whether it be, I mean, there's younger people that are interested in it and got dogs and stuff, and that's good to see, you know. And
yeah.
You see families now again running around with dogs and take teams out on the weekend and stuff, and yeah, I mean, if those people stay around, you know, then dog team would stay around, because
I see some big dogs there too.
Yeah, and
what
it's
they call them, McKenzie River Huskies.
Yeah, those big old ones. Yeah,
mm-hmm. but
they're, you know, they're recreational teams mainly, and that's good, and they take good care of them, and they fish. They got fish wheels in the fall, and they fish and fish for them and stuff, so that's good.
But like you said too, you know, right now in anything you pursue, even in this dog machine, it's pretty high tech and it's pretty quality wise.
Yep.
I remember when one of the mushers in the Yukon Quest came through here as his first race. He didn't look too good, but next couple of years he was through here. I mean, he was pretty flashy. Yellow, all yellow. equipment and the best of clothing and all that, and so I mean, once you start winning too, and that's where you make a name.
Yeah,
but
then it gets easier because you start getting in some sponsorship.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. But it's an expensive sport, you
yeah.
know, if you can call it sport, which it is. I mean, you know, breeding that's expensive.
And
just maintaining dogs is expensive.
All your kids, they all drove dogs too, right?
Every one of them, even.
My Mary,
even the lady back there,
good.
She drove them. She came down, she used to come down Boulder, remember?
Holy smokes. I wouldn't do that.
And a lot of people, they don't even know that, you know.
They
won't even go near Boulder Creek.
I went down
now.
There a couple of times. I had to put a roof lock, or what they call it. You
yeah,
remember?
Yeah.
That's the only way.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting how, when you talk about Boulder, I can remember your mom telling me, coming down, she came down Boulder, I think they came back in Cold Creek or something one time, and she had one or two kids in the sled, and she, imagine that, little kids, and she was telling me that they'd be coming back, and she came down Boulder with a couple kids, and that's what they did, they rough locked those sleds. So, anyway.
You know, whenever I'm someplace too, I do a lot of goodwill advertisement on Eagle. I'm proud of Eagle, I'm proud of the people that I know in Eagle. And even some of those kids, the beautiful kids that come out of Eagle,
mm-hmm.
you know, the beautiful children, like, I can go and say, you see that girl over there? You see that boy over there? They grew up out in the woods, out in Eagle. Hey, look, are you positive? I said, yes,
yeah.
I know their parents. You see what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
People are very amazed at that. You know, it's a hard life, like you said, but it's also, a lot of them want that life, you know?
Yeah.
And that I would like to, you see, in form of how come you did it, because you loved it, and then it's a form of your income for your family, your hunting and trapping.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also that the people before you that did it, they were the, like we always say, the trail breakers. Do you think that they were pretty darn tough, special type of people to do it?
They had to be. I mean,
yeah.
You know, it wasn't very forgiving.
Yeah.
You know, and they had to be if they're going to live the life. Yeah, people, you think about people coming before you and stuff. I mean, that just reminded me of, you know, my fishnet site down there.
Yeah.
You know. Your grandfather fished that site.
Mm-hmm.
Your dad told me that. Your grandfather fished that. And then old, you know, I get, you know, I started fishing because old Stacy was around there, because his parents were down there. So. And so it's me, someone's been on there ever since. And I can remember your dad telling me that your grandfather used to, the steamboats or something would come by and they'd deliver fish to those boats out there.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so it was interesting, you know. You getting cold, Marty?
Too cold?
Well, I gotta deal with that boot store.
Yeah, I think that the reason why I wanted to do this little interview at the end is that I wanted to get your view into the sportsman and the reason why you trapped and the reason why your children were out there with you and your wife. This substantiates some of the things we're talking about, the ethnography of this land, you know, and unfortunately, sometimes it's tough, but you just don't give up. If you give up, it's...
Yeah, then yeah. It, yeah, absolutely.
So, but one of the things I noticed about you, even the first time you moved out there, but you was always active, though. You was very active.
Oh, yeah,
active,
yeah,
so,
yeah.
I think that sort of kept you in health-wise pretty good, too, huh?
Yeah, it helped that. Well, I've always loved the outdoors and stuff, you know, since I was a kid in Minnesota, really, and, you know, so.
But would you say right now that a lot of these should go on, or a lot of this would just say, well, it's past, we should forget about it?
Well, I think, you know, as long as there's people that have got an interest in it, you know, it's going to continue. And the thing is, nowadays, you know, it's, you can have a dog team. It's a lot easier to support a dog team here than it was. I mean, you know, now people got bigger motors and boats, and, you know, when you do have a road that's open in the summertime, you get stuff in here, and, you know, sleds are better. Let's face it, you know, they're faster and everything, but... And if people have got an interest in that, it's not going to disappear. Where it's disappearing, you know, people don't have the interest in it anymore, basically. There's not a need for it. I mean, it's something you don't have to do, but, you know, you've got the interest in keeping it alive, which is what a culture is all about. You know, when you forsake the fabric of whatever's keeping your culture alive or your lifestyle, you know, when that changes, or you know, then you do something else. But you know, just the fact that, you know, they're going to have a dog race next weekend, says it's still going on. So
one of the things I'm amazed at in a lot of these is that there are still some people that can still talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is the best part of it, you know. Some of them have gone before us, like the Biedermans, you know.
Yeah.
But those days can be relived through the remembrance of those stories.
Sure.
You know, Charlie. And you, even in fact, you know.
Yeah.
Because you came here and you stayed 30, 40 years.
Yeah, it's been longer than that now.
So, I mean, I remember the first time you came in, you got 10 or 12 dogs or something.
That's
like
about
that.
All. I had dogs
and
about puppies.
Three or four kids.
Yeah.
Four. Little pickup.
Yeah.
So I said, this is good, you know. And I just keep elaborating that a lot of this is what relates to what we're talking about.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
Sometime I even say that we should go back to the old mail days, because it takes just as much long time to get our mail as it would to come through the dog trails.
I can remember one thing Charlie told me and those guys about when they signed a contract, they had to get that mail to circle in a certain number of days. Now the weather didn't make any difference. They gave them a lot of time, but the weather, it had it, or they got starting to get docked. So. You know, and I thought that was something that they don't worry about that now, you know, if they don't feel like coming sometimes, airplane wise, they don't.
Well, anyway, I think that I'm going to stop now for that, and I just want to thank you.
Well, thank you, Isaac. It's a pleasure.
I think that's
pleasure
pretty good.
Doing it with you.
Mm-hmm.